Mom deserves better than a drugstore card. This Mother's Day, surprise her with a truly special personalized card from Moonpig. Add your favorite photos, a heartfelt message, and we'll even mail it for you the same day, all for just $5. From mom to grandma, we have something to celebrate every mom in your life. Every mom deserves a Moonpig card. Get 50% off your first card at Moonpig.com.
Moonpig.com.
Spring is my favorite time to start a new workout routine. With the weather warming up, it feels easier to get into the rhythm of things. Whether you have 20 minutes or an hour for a Pilates class or outdoor guided walk, Peloton has everything you need to help you get going. Get a head start on summer with Peloton at onepeloton.com.
We are recording.
Recording, everybody. Hello, hello.
Hello, hello.
Welcome to Girl What You Watching,
where we will spill the tea on what we're currently watching on TV. I'm Natasha.
And I'm Justine.
And okay, we're going to do a little catch up on Martha's Vineyard,
mm-hmm.
Real Housewives of Potomac Reunion, and Drag Race, the Lollapalooza.
Oh my God, the semifinals.
Semifinals, yes. I'm caught up on the wretched Married at First Sight reunion.
Oh, no. How many parts are there? Like five?
It's two parts.
Oh, okay.
Part two comes out tonight, so I apologize. I'm only talking about part one today. By this time this comes out, it'll be old. Whatever. There's a lot that happened in that first part, so I'm going to just talk about part one with you, girl.
Okay.
Disaster.
Oh, no. Okay.
Yeah. And then I saw a movie called Zone of Interest. It's a little dark, but I'll talk.
Sounds it.
Yeah. Oh. What about you, friend? What are you talking about?
I'll be talking about Shogun today, which we are both watching.
Yes,
I'm so excited we're both watching this type of show. We never both watch this type of show the same vein. So
no.
I'm excited about that.
Mm-hmm.
And then Michael Arsenault's book, I can't say Jesus. Oh my God. Buy that one too. But I finally bought Jordan's.
Oh, nice. You finished.
Almost.
Almost. Okay. Yeah. I'm still working on it too. Nice. All right. Lots to chat about.
Mm-hmm.
Before we dive into the shows, there's some things we got to talk about.
There are some things. So JoJo Siwa, as a public relations major, I would just love to talk about the downfall of this young lady. And then, not downfall, I guess her failed rebrand. That's how I should phrase it, her failed rebrand.
Okay.
And then Gerard Carmichael was on The Breakfast Club attempting to defend his sucking of white toes.
Oh,
and then you asked about Coachella, and I just have a quick fact that I would just love to tell you about Coachella that I think is really interesting.
Nice.
And that's it.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. This is the least we've talked about Coachella. I feel like every year,
uh-huh.
not even just us, I think just like collectively the media.
Uh-huh.
Everybody's losing interest in Coachella, it seems.
Yep.
So I'm curious to hear any thoughts. Want to listen to this episode ad-free with our juicy pre-show? Head on over to Patreon, join the Rose Garden. On Patreon, you can also watch us on video. We've got some new cameras. We're looking real crisp.
We look so good.
On our little video. And yeah, you can try out a Patreon membership with a 7-day free trial. Head to patreon.com/2blackgirls1rose. And shout out to the Rose Garden. Love it. We love you guys. And we're having a lot of fun over in community chats. Haven't mentioned that in a while.
Oh my God, community chats is so much fun.
The group text. It's so fun. Join Patreon. You get access.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Let's kick off with Bravo.
Oh my God, so much happened.
Holy shit. Potomac.
That's what I should have told you for the pre-show. There's a lot going on. Have you heard Rebecca Minkoff is hired for Real Housewives of New York?
What? She's joining the cast?
Yes, according to Deadline, she is joining the cast.
A new cast member?
They need a new one though. Come on.
I mean, definitely. They could have replaced Jenna and threw her in.
So this is what I'm hoping, because they're both huge in fashion. I'm really hoping she's gonna get Jenna to fight. Which is
Square
so toxic. So toxic to me. I don't care. Like this lady. I
need Jenna to do something. Shit. Oh my God.
because this
interesting.
Yeah. So she joined the cast. Okay. Alexia from Miami, her husband served her divorce papers.
I saw that.
Yeah,
I did see that.
Wild.
Didn't they just get married?
Two years ago, girl.
Oh, Lord.
Then,
Lord.
I think this is her third husband, I think.
Oh, God. Poor marriage. Poor institution of marriage. Just out
at
here.
At this
just...
point, I feel it's like air fryers. Like, I just feel bad for it.
I just feel bad for the institution. Like, God.
Oh, man. She hasn't had good luck. She has not had good luck. This is definitely her nicest husband so far. And she has not had good luck. You know, she was on Cocaine Cowboys. She was like, Alexia was out here.
Oh yeah.
Miami in the 80s.
In Miami, yeah.
And then, yeah, Candace is pregnant. Yay!
Yes. Yay. Excited for her.
And then Robin's officially fired. Yay!
Yep.
Yeah. I think that's it. I think that rounds out all the news.
Like all the new stuff, yeah.
Yeah.
So Potomac, this reunion, first of all, this is the worst season of Potomac ever. ever. Desperately needs an Atlanta, New York, like, reboot, something.
Yeah.
They gotta shake this up. They can't bring back the cast as is next season and expect the audience to still be there. Because I'm already saying, I'm not watching. They allowed Robin to sit up there all season and do nothing and then fire her.
Yeah. Please.
That was dumb.
She should have never came back. Mid-season. She should have
been pulled. After two episodes of her saying, I don't care, they should have just fired her on the spot.
Yeah, yeah. Especially you have Kiarnason right there.
Thank you. Put some more cameras on Kiarna, please. So that was just a miss, I think, for this season.
Mm-hmm.
And then Giselle on this reunion. I mean.
Hateful. She's like... cold. People now are like, whose first lady was she? But nobody says anything bad about when she was first lady. Everybody said she was nice. I don't know.
She's a mean.
Yeah, she was mean.
Yeah.
Mean lady.
She was mean. She came there, literally looked her boss in the face and said, I'm not going to reconcile, essentially.
Yeah. Yeah.
Andy kicked off saying, we need to get to some type of middle ground here, ladies. And she sat there with no intention of doing so. Not even trying. I don't wanna. Yeah. Kicking and screaming. I don't wanna.
Yep.
So, but I think it's because she's just gotten away with murder season after season. She's gone away this season and last season, I would say, just being a bone collector, not giving us any storylines at all.
Yeah.
And at this point, I think she's just bad for the show, particularly now without Robin. Who is Giselle and why do I care?
Oh, my God. I don't know. And that's the thing. When she did have a storyline, her ass got torn up. Okay. With Sherman, with Jamal, with even that house.
Yeah.
When her house was a storyline, Wendy tore her ass up about the house.
And she don't want to take the heat. Uh-uh. So she'd rather not bring a storyline and she'd rather make up lies about other people's husbands and do some bone collecting work and that's it.
Yeah. And be Andy's favorite.
Yeah. But like the viewers are seeing it now and we're tired of it.
Mm-hmm.
Like we need people to carry their weight. Let's be real.
Yeah. Yeah.
Ashley, she another one. Been getting away with murder.
I cannot believe she said she was massaging that man's feet and then said that she's allegedly pushing to get a divorce. And then she's always so unsure. Everything they ask her, she's like, I don't really know. I'm like, girl, you got to know at least how to hang on to this chick. Stay married to this man or start dating.
Why not?
And get outside.
Mother of two. Shouldn't you be establishing a little bit more certainty for yourself, if not for your kids?
I don't even want to get into that.
But all right. No judgment, but I got a question. Like, hello.
I don't even want to get into that, girl.
Oh, my God. But I love how Kiarna called her out and was like, you are the queen of apologies after the fact.
Aftermath. Yeah.
That's exactly what Ashley does.
Yeah.
Says whatever she wants, drags in whoever she wants, and then apologizes after the fact. And it's just like, and just gets to play dumb. Bat her little pretty face, her eyelashes, and just play dumb. They're so tired of it. And especially with Giselle looking across the way, talking about it was all you guys' fault. And didn't say none to Ashley. Ashley's the one who brought the Muppet to the fucking club.
I was like, when she said Wendy, I was like,
that
you
is
know
ridiculous.
There's colorism allegations out about
already against you. You literally looked at the three brown-skinned girls and still said it's all of your fault.
All your fault.
What? It's just comical. Like, it's nuts. Like,
what? And then say that you're absolved because your father did civil rights work and that you went to Howard?
Right.
You asked Onika Mirage the definition of colorism last season on the reunion.
Mm-hmm.
What do you mean?
What do you mean?
Your light-skinned friend was the one who tried to fight Monique with an umbrella. Okay. Mm-hmm. I believe that was season 3 or 4. Mm-hmm. You did not bring security to her house the same way you brought security to Monique's house after Monique fought Candace and won. But anyway, you know what I'm saying? Like, Monique, she really, you know? Mm-hmm. But and Robin didn't do anything. But still, like, you just treat these people so differently. For you to be called, listen, you're colorist, you do this, you do that, you make me feel away by the people who are actually dark-skinned. Mm-hmm. And then to sit there and blame them is the level of delusion.
Delusion.
I can't even imagine.
And the level of in one ear, out the other. She doesn't care. She just doesn't care. Just the optics of that alone was insane, Giselle. But she don't care. And so her and Ashley.
It was none of their faults except Ashley. Yeah.
It was only Ashley's fault. She brought Deborah there. Everybody knows Deborah is thirsty for attention. The last time she came around, she brought up allegations on everybody's husbands that was to be unfounded. Why is she still allowed around?
Oh,
what the heck?
And I don't, that's the thing. Ashley and Deborah are so foolish to even see that one of them turned those allegations into $2 million net revenue. Happy Eddie.
Happy Eddie. Yup.
And you can't even get divorced from your Gollum husband because you can't pay the mortgage on your house that's owned by his LLC. Because you can't turn shit around.
Right. And here you come with GNA.
Girl.
About the...
No, you don't come with GNA. There's nowhere. It's nowhere.
You can't even find it. They still paying down that fashion show. Them samples that went nowhere. I can't.
Oh my God.
Oh my Lord.
So this level of delusion, we can't have it, and we can't have this level of obvious colorism.
No,
we just can't do this.
We just cannot do it. The way that Ashley sat up there and was like, I admit I didn't know what Osu meant. And
oh my God. And how Wendy was like, you brought it up.
Do any research. Yeah, you brought, I love that. I'm sorry. We needed Wendy at this reunion.
Oh my God, the doctor.
We really needed her. Oh my God. Well, since you brought it up, Ashley, how about you explain what Osu, the way I fell out. So that's right, Wendy. Put her on the spot. Yeah. What is Osu?
Yep.
Ma'am.
Yep. And she still didn't know. That was like
she
a year ago.
She still didn't know. Still humna humna. She still ain't have a clue.
Jesus Christ.
But it's like, enough. I'm tired of watching that. This like playing dumb, not being held accountable, apologizing after. Enough. Like, you could see how tired Candace, Wendy, even Karen sitting there, just so tired of this.
I know. And Karen, I'm not absolving you either with your Sweden self. I'm so tired of her playing like, oh, it's okay, it's okay. What you're seeing is not okay. What it's Giselle okay. and Robin are doing are not okay.
Mm-hmm.
Why
mm-hmm.
you are not asking questions to them the same way you were asking questions to Candace and Wendy, I don't like.
Mm-hmm. That's true.
I don't like that. So that's you're true. Not her, above it either.
Yeah. Her energy and her heat is not the same.
Yep. Yep.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And then NECA.
NECA just sat on the end trying to get where she fit in, girl.
Trying to get in where she fit
in. I said, not Kiarna closer to Andy than you. You were here all season.
How Kiarna got the third seat and you all the way up. On the end.
What? And Kiarna looked better too. Kiarna looked fabulous.
Fab.
Oh my God.
Oh Lord. So yeah, Potomac, I don't know what y'all gonna have to do.
It's gonna be Kiarna and friends.
Or Kiarna we're not and watching. Friends. Yeah. Or else I have no interest. Ain't nothing left here for me. Sorry. Mm-mm. Martha's Vineyard.
Yes. Yes. Martha's Vineyard, we have to keep watching the show, guys, because these black people deserve.
Yes.
Time.
We keep saying this every damn week.
Because that's really what it is.
That's it. I'm turning out to support, but I'm bored. I'm so bored.
God. And we can't let Bria keep doing this. Cannot let Bria stop Mariah from coming.
No, absolutely not.
Mariah has to get here.
Please. And I feel they've been talking about Mariah coming for the past like two episodes. We need to move this along. Is she coming or not? Now I'm annoyed.
I'm annoyed. They even said, even Noelle and Summer said by the pool, I can't believe we haven't even been here a week. Girl, me either.
Oh my God.
And yeah. I'm watching you for entertainment. Okay. Oh my Lord.
I'm not as interested in the female friendships and the female, like their dynamics, as I thought I would be. Or as I've known myself to be. For whatever reason, I'm wholly uninterested in Jordan and Summer and their fighting over Jordan's hair. Or Summer barking at Jordan because Jordan spoke to her disrespectfully or whatever. I just don't care. I'm really just like, I don't find it interesting.
It's not. That's because it's not interesting. Until you just said that, I did not know what they were even fighting about.
It just feels so petty. It feels so tiny.
Yeah, it's so tiny and stupid. Everybody in there, I know Bria is the most obvious, but everybody in there is a chihuahua, except for Jasmine. Everybody in there is just bark, 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 bark. No bite. No bite. No bite anywhere. No. Nobody's actually going to do shit. So when you sit here and you say, and same with Alex, the guy, the vegan. Mm-hmm. He's so disingenuous in the way that he speaks. Mm-hmm. I really don't. He doesn't care about anybody sitting there. Mm-hmm. He is not friends with a single one of them. Yeah. I have no clue what he's doing on this television program besides to promote whatever music installation pop-up that he's doing in New York. And we still don't know what that's called. Newsletter, whatever the fuck
that,
it is.
Like subscription
this
service.
Substack. Yeah. He's box. Subscription Fabletics service that he's trying to sell. And so when he points out, hey Jordan, you haven't been this, and she's like, what are you talking about, can you explain? And he can't, because he does not give a fuck about her.
He doesn't care. The same way he brought up Shanice's ex. The stalking thing, and try to play off like, oh, I didn't know. You knew exactly what you was doing. The same way you asking Jordan how she doing, you trying to just start shit. You don't care about them, actually. And they know that. That's why they don't fuck with you.
Right. And then when Jordan says, well, I really get gangster, you can't get gangster. We know that, okay? You were probably in Jack and Jill. I know that you're not gangster. Yes. So let's not stop with this. You know who is gangster? Who we saw? Jasmine. She said, my mother is a two-time convicted felon. The way she said it so calmly, I was like, she'll kill you.
Yeah, she said, I did not see that coming. I was like,
me either. And I lived. And her and her mom were on Watch What Happens Live after.
Oh, really?
Oh my God, her mom's drop dead gorgeous.
Oh,
drop dead. And they were so fabulous together. Even asking questions about Silas, she was like, yeah, he was terrible last season. What about it?
Like, what else?
It's really funny. And then Preston needs another gay man really bad because they would get Bria all the way together.
They would. Yeah.
They would.
I fell for Preston because he was talking about church and not going to church. And then Amir with his bullshit just came in like talking nonsense. Just ended the conversation.
I know.
Preston needed somebody else to like volley with in that moment. And there was nobody there. And then Amir is so up his own ass. He just wanted to hear himself speak that we didn't even get the full thought out of Preston. I was annoyed. I was really annoyed.
Me too. Because Preston has a lot to say.
Right? He has a lot to say. And Amir is saying nothing.
Ever.
So that was a miss. And I agree. They need another queer person, girl.
Queer person, yeah.
Anybody who can just like volley with him in conversation and talk like realness with him, because he's trying. He's trying with them, and they just don't get it. Yeah.
I was like, none of these girls are even really allies, which is really interesting.
Yeah,
very interesting to me. But
yeah, who's he closest with in the house? I feel like
I want to say the guys. I want to say Silas was his like alpha brother, right? He's in a fraternity, so I think.
Oh, that's right. They were
that thing. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah, but
yeah,
I don't know. Martha's Vineyard, we need some personality shakeups. All these people doing all these same things, saying all these same things to each other in loud voices is like not.
Yeah, not it. And I need some single guys. I'm sorry. A part of Summer House is watching young people living their best life in the summertime, and a big part of that is relationships. Mm-hmm. Who's hooking up with who? Who's getting messy with who? Who's doing who?
Yep.
That's part of what we want to watch. Yep. I don't want to see just two girls kumbaya over her hair loss. I feel for you, Jordan. But I don't necessarily want to be watching that. I'm sorry.
No. No.
Just being honest. That's not why I tuned into Summer House. No. Sorry. So they got to figure. It just feels like a lot of individual bodies in this house and nobody really carrying weight. And then guys like Amir and Alex and Nick who have girlfriends and are just like not really providing any
anything
value, like, comedic relief, any type of drama, like just taking up space. If anything, bring back Phil. At least we'll get some fucking drama out of him.
Something out of him.
Give me something.
Okay. Real quick question for you, because this is my, I had a totally different play for this. When Noelle went up to Alex and said, you know that I've been interested in you, right? How would you have said that with knowing that you're on television, you are on here for entertainment, you're the new girl in the house, you're the most fabulous, and you need like some kind of like storyline, get to know me type of thing. How would you have brought that up to Alex?
Mm-hmm. First of all, I'm not telling him I have feelings for him.
That's number one.
So okay. That's number one. She messed up just off rip there.
Yeah.
I'm not saying anything. He's in the club hanging out with girls or talking, because she was mad that he was like talking to girls or something like that. Mm-hmm. She thought it was disrespectful, and then she was talking about it with people, and then they're like, oh, talk to Alex, whatever. Mm-hmm. We're both single in this house. He's doing him. I'm going to see him doing him, and I'm going to go find a guy to talk about. And then later when we're back at the house, mm-hmm. when we're at the hot tub or whatever, I might like flirtly, like in a flirty way, bring it up. Like, well, I saw you talking with that girl at the club, you know, in a way. So he knows that I'm like interested in watching him, but he also saw me at the club talking to that dude. Mm-hmm. So now we're playing a game, right? Mm-hmm. Now we're two young kids You're playing balling. Games with each other. Yeah. Yes. Yeah, and then by next week, we hooking up. Like, and then we get a storyline. We get a couple episodes. You know what I mean? Like, she just put it all out in that one episode, told him how she felt, which was so dumb. Not even for the sake of the show, for the sake of life. Why are you telling him anything about how you feel about him? Mm-hmm. Knowing already he's very much a quote unquote hot commodity. He fucked your friend. He's in the club talking to girls. You don't need to know that you're into him. That was just dumb. Mm-hmm. So that's where she messed up just off rip. I think she could have played it different. She could have somehow let him know she was interested in like a flirty way. Mm-hmm. And in a way that like, I'm not just looking at you. I'm also over here at the club dancing with guys. Just so you know, I'm a hot commodity too. Mm-hmm. And I thought she was going to play it like that. That's how I thought her energy was giving me. Mm-hmm. What's her name? What's her
Noelle.
Name? Noelle. That she had that kind of like boldness to her. But that went quickly away when she sat there, her tail beneath her legs, talking about, I'm really into you. Did you know that? I was like, girl, what? What about you? What would you do?
I think that's a great plan. I think that's also would have been a great use of Nick, because Nick seems real loose in his relationship.
Real loose. That was actually interesting. The whole handsy thing.
Yeah, that was.
That was interesting to watch them confront him like that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Ugh. And I need the German back.
Yeah.
Side note. I need the German back. Even just hearing his accent, like, we don't schnitzel. Like, I just need him back. I love him. Anyway, I think I said this last week, maybe. Now I'm having deja vu. I think I said this last week. But I would have said to him, I know you fucked my friend, but I want to fuck you too. So let's take off these mic packs and let's get it going.
You did say that.
I think I did, right? Mm-hmm. I think she should have proposed it in a way that was secretive. That was something like a nasty little secret summer fling romance.
A little secret in the house.
Yes. A little secret in the house. Only the two of us will know, even though there's a full cameraman running in cargo shorts behind us. I think that would have been a lot of fun to watch. Instead of her just like laying it all out and being like, I like you. Do you like me? Check yes, no, maybe.
That was so stupid.
Yeah.
Whole storyline just gone.
Gone, man. Gone. And I really like her.
I really like her too.
Yeah.
And I just feel like she's just wasn't prepared for reality TV.
And they weren't prepared for her either, because there should be guys for her and there aren't.
There should be. Yeah, absolutely. So. That aren't just Alex. Alex is the only single guy there, right?
Yeah, and that's why he feels so like big bad and whatever. That's why he feels so above everybody, because he's the only single one.
Right.
Anyway.
Anyways, that was Martha's Vineyard. What else? Drag Race? Do we talk Drag Race?
Drag Race, sure. Yes!
This Lollapalooza was wild, yo.
This was, and you know what? we are left, and I think you agree, we mm-hmm. are left our top three with no real dancers.
Yeah, that's true.
Right?
Yeah, that is true.
Safira's a good dancer, but she still got them
the slew
flipper
foot.
Shoes.
The slew foot.
We still have a slew foot. Mm-hmm. Plane can't really move. And Nymphia never even wears anything that provides
yeah.
an and area of movement.
Nymphia, we haven't seen Nymphia lip sync.
Nope.
So we don't know what the hell they can do.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. So the fact that we're left with three non-dancers means that a lot of dancers left. Yeah. So I was very excited for this week's episode.
That's true. We knew it was going to get a good show for mm-hmm. sure. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. But yeah, I thought it was a lot of fun. I actually mm-hmm. want to rewatch it. I enjoyed it so damn much. Yeah. Okay. Mandatory meeting.
Oh my God.
I just want to start there.
Sure.
Great performer.
Yes.
Such a great performer.
Yes. Yeah.
You don't want to look at her.
Oh my God. Crazy.
You don't want to look at her.
And out of drag. Beautiful.
Beautiful. I'm so mad at him. Why he makes himself up to be such an ugly woman. Why? And you came back to the same makeup.
Raggedy. Looking raggedy.
Raggedy.
You know what it is? She's a baby queen. She's only been doing this like 2 years.
Yeah.
So
she needs a new mama. Who's her mama?
She needs a new mom. I don't know who her mom is. I don't know what house she's in. I don't know if she has it. She looks homeless. She's looking houseless.
Homeless. Yes. She looks houseless out here in these drag streets. Somebody adopt this child because it's such a shame. Because she's killing it up there, but then you're like, oh, so but the face is just, you don't want to watch her.
I know. You know what? It's the same with Marsha. Remember, she would just wear some chapstick and some eyeliner and keep it moving, okay? Not a lash, nothing.
Mm-mm.
Oh my God. But she had a much softer features. A mandatory meeting has very
angular, strong face.
Yeah, strong face.
Beautiful.
Yeah.
Gorgeous.
But
face.
Yeah. She probably needs some new inspo too. She probably needs more like Grace Jones inspo, like stronger faced women.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, she's got to figure out her drag, what mm-hmm. the concept is, what she wants to do.
Mm-hmm.
Have the face, but everything else is just a mess. So terrible. Megami, I'm
shocked because she was my biggest disappointment of the season.
Gag, yeah, I know.
Yeah,
and somebody called her the Eeyore of drag. I think it was a plane.
Oh,
when Plane said that. I hollered because that is so spot on. She that is Megami,
exactly like Eeyore in and out
it
of drag.
Sounds
both.
Like him. Sounds like him in the confessionals. Just so soft spoken, so slow. Just talks so just like drawn out. So sweet. Like you love
so
Megami.
Nice.
So nice.
Nerdy too. So like, just
yes.
like you know, like soft. Yeah.
Yes. Underdog. You love her. Like you wish her well, you know. But the way Megami, first of all, ate up and spit out Q, that first performance
I mean,
it doesn't take much.
It really Q. don't. It really
doesn't.
Don't.
But I was like, damn, okay, Megami. Even
I
the
know.
Outfit was cute.
Yeah,
I loved
outfit
her outfit.
Was good. The outfit was
so good.
Great
up the
song
whole time.
Choices, too. Doing mm-hmm. the strategy here.
Strategic, yes. Yeah. Her performance with a mandatory meeting, she like brought the humor with the little
mm-hmm,
puppet thing
mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
that was smart. She came like nobody expected her at all, and
mm-mm.
she knew herself and she
mm-hmm.
came prepared.
Mm-hmm.
It was
mm-hmm.
really cool to watch, just like every with each lip sync, she was just bring out a new thing.
Mm-hmm.
Like, now I'm gonna do the
humor,
now I'm gonna do this. Like, oh shit,
yeah.
So that was amazing.
Yeah. I think, too, she was one of the queens beat by Maya Iman LePage, Queen of Flips. At Queen of Flips is her Instagram name. Queen of Flips.
Oh, okay.
Yes. Mm-hmm. Yes, ma'am. All those people who were beat by Queen of Flips are all mad because
all
that
mad.
Was unfair.
Yes.
That lady is even there.
Yes. Yes. That's what made it so good, as
mm-hmm.
so many people were coming to seek vengeance.
Revenge.
Revenge. Specifically against Maya.
Yeah. Yeah.
And Maya came doing what she does her flips. Mm-hmm. I think her first performance was good. Mm-hmm. But I'm bored of Maya. I think that's Are what you? It was. I think people was getting bored.
Yeah. Maya to me reminds me a lot of La La Ri, where I really want to see them live in a live show. And I really want to be there. Mm-hmm. Drag Race, though, is not the place for that person. It's a great place for that person to have like great shine and a great platform and, you know, have them perform all over the country. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. But like, you know, in a comedian skit.
No.
Even Lala was much better in Lala was comedic funny, sense.
At least. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
Maya got flips and that's about it. Like, that's really it. So yeah, that Mirage was happy to see her a little bit more.
I was so happy to see that she was there, and everybody is still clowning her over those lyrics. I think they're still tough for her.
I think it is. Whoever had her, whoever chose her, or whoever she chose, they chose the song. They specifically chose a song that had a lot of lyrics because they were like, I know she's not a lyrics queen, so we're going to work this out. Mm-hmm. And she did okay, but it was just nice to see her a little bit.
Yeah.
And then the final two, Megami and Morphine.
Who would have thought Maya would not be? I thought it would be a Miami Queen battle.
Maya and Morphine again.
And Morphine. Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. I think they just got bored of Maya.
Yeah.
I don't even remember who her set. I think it was her versus Megami, right?
It was a three of them, I think. I think it was down to semifinals.
But then she went ahead to the semifinals and she performed one more time against somebody.
Okay.
I don't remember who it was.
I think Megami.
I think it was Megami, yeah. Mm-hmm. But it was just more of the same. Mm-hmm. It was just the same Maya, so it was like time to go. But yeah, I feel like... Okay, so I want to know how you feel about Morphine. And I haven't looked online to know what people are saying about her winning, whatever. I think Morphine is a good lip syncer. Mm-hmm. She's not the best we've seen. Mm-hmm. I think her face carries her very far. Mm-hmm. That face just brings her through.
Unbelievable.
It's beautiful. Yeah. Literally, when the light hits it, you're like, oh my God. It's like the most beautiful woman I've ever seen. Like, but when you really just think about her lip syncing skills and her dance skills objectively, like, she's not the best we've ever seen.
No, she's not the best we've ever seen, definitely. I think, and I'd be interested to see what more drag queens think about queens like this, because we had a much better cast than we had last season. But these queens who can't, where lip syncing is not like their strongest suit, how did you get on the show? Usually there's like a lot of people who can really lip sync down. And this time there's like a lot of, like, Q, for example. Q and Nymphia would never be even on the same season like 10 years ago. You know what I'm saying? And it's interesting to me. It's just
I think they're bringing in a lot more just artistic queens and creative directors more than anything. Which I guess there's a lane for that as well. But I don't know. I love Morphine. Think she's gorgeous. Whatever. I think she definitely did deserve to win based on what we saw last week. But I still was like, she's good, not great. As a lip syncer. Good, not great.
Yeah.
Entertaining.
Entertaining. Yeah, because when we watch All Stars and we see Laganja Estranja, like, you know, and we see, like, even Ginger Minj. Like, even her. Like, you know?
When you compare, it's like, all right. But she's gorgeous. That face. So pretty. That face carried her.
I can't wait to see her on billboards. I can't wait to see her as the face of whatever.
All kinds of shit.
You know, Patrick, the one size I could see her doing, like, amazing things. But
definitely.
Yeah. Lip sync assassins. There's only Maya, pretty much. Really? And Megami. Or not Megami. Mirage. I think Mirage is a lip sync assassin.
She just needs
to learn the words.
She got to learn the words.
Ahead of time.
Yeah, because she could dance. She could dance down and wear some 8-inch fucking stripper heels.
The blazers, bro.
Oh, my God. It's doing flips and shit. Yeah. So impressive. All right. Well, that was Drag Race.
Yeah, that was Drag Race. Fun.
Can I tell you about Married at First Sight, Denver?
Yeah.
Reunion?
Yeah. Is this part of what we watched together?
When did we watch this?
When? Tuesday? No. What day was I at your house? Thursday?
Oh, we were watching. I think we were watching that. Yes, we were watching part of it.
Perfect. Mm-hmm. Okay.
So this is that. So again, part two comes out tonight, y'all. By the time you hear this, this is late. Whatever. Mm-hmm. So we'll talk about part two another time. But this is this season of Married at First Sight is the worst season in the history of the franchise across all countries.
God, like, damn.
It was so bad, Justine.
Oh, no.
All the couples divorced.
Oh, no.
And this ending, this reunion, mm-hmm. is just an absolute dumpster fire.
Mm.
Throw the whole show in the trash. Like, they really got to just... I feel like it's outstayed their welcome. That's how I'm starting to feel like. Because we've progressively seen season after season after season.
Yeah, yeah.
The match is getting worse and worse and worse.
Yeah.
Like, I can't tell the difference between...
Mom deserves better than a drugstore card. This Mother's Day, surprise her with a truly special personalized card from Moonpig. Add your favorite photos, a heartfelt message, and we'll even mail it for you the same day, all for just $5. From mom to grandma, we have something to celebrate every mom in your life. Every mom deserves a Moonpig card. Get 50% off your first card at moonpig.com.
Moonpig.com.
There's never been a faster or easier way to start your weight loss journey than with PlushCare. PlushCare accepts most insurance plans and gives you online access to board-certified physicians who can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Take charge of your health and speak with a board-certified physician about a weight loss plan that's right for you. Get started today at PlushCare.com/weightloss. That's PlushCare.com/weightloss. PlushCare.com/weightloss.
The experts and the therapists and the producers at this point. And that's a problem.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
That's a real problem. I can't trust the experts. And mm-hmm. now the contestants also don't trust the experts. Like, what are we watching?
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
So yeah, this season was an absolute joke. So this reunion, the entire cast, all the guys, all the girls, with the exception of Michael, the guy that got matched twice.
Oh, yeah. Uh-huh.
And the new girl, with the exception of them. Uh-huh. The entire cast, the all rest of the 10 of them.
Yeah.
Openly admitted to a secret pact
Yo.
That they made from day one to manufacture storylines and to control their narratives.
Oh my God.
Yeah.
Did Kevin Frazier ask the question, what was the last season y'all watched? Because that's what I want to know.
I don't think so. At least not that I remember.
Because why is it that you all have to have a secret pact all together to have storylines that you're manufacturing? Because what did you watch before that made you think that you could not be your authentic self
right.
on TV?
Right, right.
Huh, okay.
Clearly they've all watched the show, all yes. of them, many seasons before.
yeah.
Studied the shit, clearly. And it's just so annoying because they went in thinking that they can outsmart the producers and outsmart mm-hmm. the audience
mm-hmm.
as well
mm-hmm.
and somehow come out on top. And now mm-hmm. they're all sitting here on stage, every last one of them, all five of them ladies, all five of them men, all of them looking like Boo Boo the Fool. And Kevin Frazier let them have it as well, which I appreciate.
Good.
So the women, they all show up wearing pink.
Yeah, in solidarity of femininity.
Yes, a united front. And their plan coming into the reunion was essentially to expose this pact and this like secret alliance that they all spoke about
uh-huh.
but then they wanted to just pin it on the guys
mm-hmm.
they came in saying that Cameron mm-hmm. the guy from New Zealand, he was the mastermind of all of it
mm-hmm.
they all felt pressure to go along with the guy's plan and how the men were so focused on how they looked and not really on the marriage
mm-hmm.
definitely
mm-hmm.
truth in all of that
yeah
however as Kevin Frazier let them have it, you women were complicit.
yeah. Yeah.
You were complicit. You cannot sit here and not take accountability and pin it all on the guys and all sit, like all five of them were like, we're the victims. No, You were complicit in trying mm-hmm. to mastermind your story and trying to outwit the producers and production. And you were part of it. Right. So regardless of whether the guy started or you said, you went along with it. And now you ended up all five of y'all divorced. And I'm sure at least some of the women probably came in really hoping for a marriage. Mm-hmm. You're sitting here without a marriage. Mm-hmm. And now you're mad about it.
Yeah. Yeah. I do wonder, friend, as well, how it could possibly look good to expose a pact in a current pact.
Right. A pact that you were a part of. Like, what?
How dumb do y'all think we are?
I don't know. And I was so pissed just watching their whack ass, like, sisterhood empowerment, blah, blah, blah. Yeah. And like, were the men of this season horrible? Yes. Mm-hmm. Are they usually? Yes. Mm-hmm. But were you also complicit in some bullshit with said terrible men? Yes. So y'all suck too. Like, I can't.
Oh boy.
But the reunion, oh my gosh, so much was revealed. Cameron and Claire, I think they together were the masterminds, but they're both pointing the whole at the thing. Other person. Okay. I think it was both of them.
Okay.
Don't forget,
okay.
Claire's a therapist. She's not dumb. Mm-hmm. If anybody knows how to outplan and manipulate, is the therapist, I would think. But she comes in, she's playing very much the victim. Mm-hmm. And we learn that they faked their religious differences. So remember, they broke up. Because she wanted to raise kids Christian. He didn't. That was totally fake. The whole thing was fake.
Today. Oh my God.
He also then accused Claire on their, I think on their honeymoon, he said. She was crying and admitted that she was still in love with her ex-boyfriend. And then he accused her of maybe still fucking her boyfriend during their marriage. She's saying it's all a lie. There's some truth in there somewhere, Claire. I'm sorry. There has to be. Yeah, the accusations they were throwing at each other were like nuts. Like, what are we watching? And then at the end of all of that, Cameron was saying he wanted to get back with her. It was just
get back with her.
It made no sense, girl. I have no idea.
Oh, no.
Then Becca and Austin, the girl with the pink hair, they were like the saving grace.
The only ones. Yep.
They were doing so well until they weren't. And when she broke up, or she was starting to get weird with him, was like calling him out for stuff, I assumed she was self-sabotaging. Like, she was getting too scared because he seemed like a nice guy to me. Like, I didn't understand. We learn they were all caught up in their own bullshit as well, plotting and planning. She says that she was starting to get confused because some of their moments of affection were like real and genuine. Mm-hmm. But then off camera, they were plotting to like not be together or something. So she herself got caught up in her own web of lies and got confused. She didn't know what was real, what wasn't. It seemed like she wanted to be with him, but then she didn't. Like, so she played herself, basically.
Okay.
That's what I gathered from that. And then just saying a lot of inconsistencies with like on camera, he would promise to work on their physical intimacy, but then off camera, they wouldn't. Mm-hmm. And then there were certain things they agreed to not talk about on camera, but she was confused as to whether he liked her or not. So then she started bringing them up on camera, which angered Austin because it went against their plan. Then she accused him of him and the guys apparently all conspired to not have sex with their wives. Because remember, that was a big thing with them.
She
said that it was part of a larger plan of all of the guys. And how he was like the ringleader or some shit, which he denied, the men denied, but she had, you know, she's saying she knew because of blah, blah, blah. Like,
okay. So do you have a strong feeling that the last season that they watched was with our Justin and Alexis?
Why would you say that?
Because they were talking so bad about his erectile dysfunction, this, that, and the third. They were talking so bad about that man's dick. Oh my God. They spread that man's dick was black so bad to the point where he had to say that her pH was off.
He did do that, yeah.
You know, like they were talking like really weird sex stuff. Do you think that was the last season that those people watched?
Maybe.
Okay.
I don't know. There was a lot.
Why would you do that? This is like crazy.
Why? And clearly they all, to your point, they all came in with some level of fear of how they're going to be perceived.
Look. Yeah. Yes. Right. Right. Yeah.
Which when you are going on reality TV, you have to suspend that belief, or that disbelief, because I know. That's part of the territory.
Who knows how you're going to look?
Who knows how you're going to look? You just got to be your authentic self and not be a dick and like hope that they don't completely just show all your dick ways on TV. Like,
oh my God.
So, yeah, they fucking crashed and burned. And then Chloe and Michael, the last couple he got remarried. Last time I watched, because I kind of dipped out. I just tuned back in after the reunion. Last time I watched, they were so cute. You know, definitely opposites. She was more like straight-laced. He's a little bit more, you know, into fashion and style. Mm-hmm. He wears skirts. Like, you know, very different for her, you know, with the type of guy she's dated. Lo and behold, we find out he said no on decision day.
Oh.
Which totally threw me when I heard that. I was like, what? Then we learn on the reunion, he never told his mother about her. Never told her about being married. Okay. Never told his mama nothing.
This is a joke.
So you had no intention of saying yes.
Yeah.
On decision day.
Yeah.
You knew you weren't going to, this wasn't real to you.
Wow.
He's sitting up here saying he regrets his decision. He thinks he should have gave it a try. Blase, blah.
Please.
The reason why I feel like he really did say no, though, which people are bringing back up, a homegirl is like an intense animal lover. Like, one of them white people who are just like obsessed with their pets.
All the pets are in the bed and everything is okay. Yeah.
She, I remember watching this episode. She told him they went to like a petting zoo or some shit. She told him she wants to have an animal sanctuary and a farm. And that's her vision. And on top of that, she also wants to adopt 5 kids.
Oh, girl, you don't know that real life. You don't need, come on now. That's not real life.
That's what she was standing on business and saying that to him. See, and he was like, what?
This is the problem. This is the problem with all these Nara Smith alikes on TikTok making this shit look like it's easy and cute and glamorous.
Right.
Like,
to
nah.
run a farm and raise 6 kids? What are you talking about?
Nah, bro. Nah. And how old are you?
In her, like, deep 30s.
What?
I'm pretty sure Chloe is in her mid to late 30s.
Chloe.
So I'm sure that was part of why he also said no. But he also didn't tell his mama, so he didn't take this thing seriously anyways.
Yeah, yeah.
And that was part one. Part two, they'll go into Emily and Brennan.
Oh, no.
The hottest of messes.
Yeah.
Orion, the indigenous guy.
My God.
Lauren already called him out, said he only came on the show to highlight his indigenous community, and she had
received. That doesn't even make sense. Like, that is crazy.
Okay. And then apparently the experts are going to come out and talk, and I'm sure take no accountability as they do.
Yeah, try to defend the show and try to defend their job. Yikes.
5 divorces, you guys. 5 divorces.
Yeah.
You did a shit job at your job.
Yeah. And 5 like very scorned women. Sometimes there's divorces, but it's not so bad. Everybody's like, you know, it just doesn't work out. It's fine. Especially by reunion. They're usually okay. Mm-hmm. But this is.
All 5
in pink in solidarity of feminism. Girl, what kind of show is this? And this
are
is
we
the,
watching?
This is the one and only show that is you are really there for marriage and not fame, because none of these people are famous.
No, that's the thing. You don't get to become nothing after the show. So what is the point? Stupid. Every last one of you. Everybody connected to that damn show this season. Everybody can get it. It was so bad. So bad.
Oh, Jesus. Oh, God.
That was maths.
That's crazy, friend. That's crazy.
Yeah, not good.
Oh, God.
I think we dipped out this season. God.
Yeah.
Tell me about... What do you...
Shogun?
Shogun. Oh, my God. Yes, let's talk Shogun.
So Shogun, it is a show that is based on a book, based on a novel written by James Clavell, an Australian novelist and former prisoner of war in Japan in 1942. And this is a show that's set in 17th century Japan. And this is the second highest rated miniseries since Roots.
Oh, damn. Really?
Mm-hmm. Yep. And it is the most expensive show in FX history. With a $7 million Super Bowl ad. Just the ad for the Super Bowl is $7 million. So.
Wow. Yeah, yeah, I believe it's an expensive ass looking show. I'll give it that.
It is. It is. Mm-hmm. It's a beautiful story, but also a little bit more about the author. He was, in a prisoner of war in Japan in 1942. He has written several books about Japan in various time periods. He had a secret Japanese daughter, because why wouldn't he?
Oh, damn.
Oh, yeah. Yep. Yep. Okay. And yeah, they took this novel. I did not write down who the showrunners are because they changed midway through, because this show has been in the running since 2019. So this is show was in the running since pre-pandemic. They've been making the show.
It's also a remake because they made the show back in 1980. So this is like a redo of the show as well.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And while I really do enjoy watching the show, and I think it's really, really well done, it is a lot for me to watch at the end of the day. I'm gonna be honest with everybody here, right? I really like at the very end of the day, because of the job that we do where we have to be creative all the time, I really like a show where I can just turn the fuck off, which is why I watch so much Trixie and Katya. But Katya's in rehab right now, so we have to pray for Katya. But yeah, so this show is a lot for me. I don't know a whole lot of the characters' names because I am on like 20% when I'm watching this show. Howsomever, what I do love about this show is that also there's not a whole lot of romance, which I don't love. I like to hang on to something relationship wise when it comes to movies or television. I've found that, and I've learned that through watching Oppenheimer.
Okay. Yeah. Shogun is definitely a political drama.
Historical drama.
Historical political drama. Yeah. Little bit of love, a little bit of...
Kind of,
but like very light. Light on the love, yeah.
Yeah, yeah. And I'm really hoping for a very intense scandal that I know is never going to happen, right? I'm really hoping that Lady Mauritius... I forget her name.
Mariko.
Mariko. The Lady Mariko fucks the priest who she's been studying under. I really am hoping for that. I don't think that's going to happen. I don't think she's going to fuck a priest. I don't think it's that kind of show.
Yeah, I don't know.
So I'm like hoping for things that are never going to happen. Howsomever, it is a love letter to Japan, which I absolutely love. So the research that I've done for this episode of Girl What You Watching, I've done on the costumes particularly. Because in the credits, the costume designer is listed before the editor of the show. That's it's how important gorgeous. He is.
Yeah. You see the budget in the costume.
Yes. Yes. Yeah, yeah. The budget for sure and the research.
Mm-hmm.
Everything looks like you're peering into a history book. Yeah, it's accurate.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. So, and also the show is praised in Japan for the authenticity, which is a great sign. So the costume designer is Carlos Rodriguez, I believe is his name. He designed 2,300 costumes for this show, which is crazy. And a lot of them he made.
Wow.
And he studied paintings from the 1600s to make these costumes. And he also read all 10 scripts before he even started on the costumes and started on the research, because so much of the costumes tell the story of the people who you're watching. And even the colors are very specific in terms of how we get along with the story, who's single, who's married, who's royalty, who's not. And Taranga changed his clothes in every scene in the first episode to show his wealth. That's how many costumes the wealthy people had to have and that they went through. And even Blackthorn, the white guy, is in like very muted earthy tones because he is the broke one.
He's the slave, prisoner. Basically.
So I thought that was really, really interesting. I think just diving into the behind the scenes of a show in this way, in this kind of show, about the costume design in particular, is something that I'm going to be looking at and studying when I watch this show, because I have a hard time gripping onto the storyline at the end of the day. But this love letter to Japan and how it looks, even how it looks when they go into someone's home, right? And they're all in this beautiful procession that's supposed to be war, but they're all like lined up together. Even that, it reminds you how young America is and how foolish America is. Because you look and you see these people going into someone's house. And this house has a dam and beautiful structures. And it looks like they laid everything brick by brick so precisely back when they only had maybe a ruler and like a compass to do all this work. And then you look at New Orleans, they're about to float away into the to Mexico. Like, we don't know what we're doing over here. It's very upsetting.
I know. It is very impressive. Like, when you think America is such a baby little country. And we're watching, this is what, 17th century?
Yeah, 17th century Japan.
17th century Japan. And just the advancements that you see in their military and just their way of life, their customs, their structure, their political structure. Like, meanwhile, America wasn't even founded yet. America wasn't founded yet. Our Revolutionary War was a hot fucking mess because ain't nobody was getting along. Our Civil War. No time before we were in the Civil War because we couldn't get our shit together. Like, and here you just see, like, this is just like, this is a century before even America was born. And you're just seeing how just ingrained and entrenched the tradition, their traditions, like the home, the family, the hierarchies, like whether you agree or not, because we see in the show, you'll see later on, there's like what are they called? Concubines? Not the concubines. The essentially the concubines, but the women that work at the brothels, there's another name for them, I forget it. But just like their place, their role in the whole society and the dynamics. And it's just interesting. Everybody plays a role, and it's so entrenched in just the design,
the culture,
of that culture that kind of allows it to function, you know, in a way. I'm not saying it's right. I'm not saying I don't, you know, want the women sitting here sleeping with the army guys or whatever, but it's just, it's part of a larger ecosystem, which is really interesting. You see later on in this, in the season. But I get it. It's a lot. It's a lot to follow. It's a lot of people.
It's a lot of people, a lot of characters.
A lot of people to keep track of. You have Toranaga, but then you have like the regents, the five different families. It's, you're essentially watching a civil war that's like breaking out and all the political scheming that's happening, but it is a lot of people to like pay attention to, but it's a beautiful watch. It's so well done. It's the music, the
The music,
the costumes, like so much to look at, so much like visually and like sensory wise to like eat up.
Yeah,
you're watching.
It's good. You had Drag Racing.
I have Zone of Interest.
Oh, Zone of Interest. That's right.
Another serious one. This is a movie about the Holocaust. So
it's going to
get a little dark, guys.
Okay.
Trigger warning if anything's going to like disturb you. Definitely jump ahead. It's one of the movies that was nominated for Best Picture this year. It's a German film. And one of the more interesting movies about the Holocaust that I've seen probably ever.
Really?
Yes. The film is a true story, and it focuses on the life of Auschwitz commander and his wife and their family of five live this in this idyllic home right next door to Auschwitz, the concentration camp. What's interesting about the film is you, unlike most Holocaust movies, you never see what's happening inside the camp. You're not seeing the atrocities. You're only hearing it. So the sound design in this film is like you understand what sound design is when you watch this movie, which is really interesting. If you want to get really into the technicalities of like filmmaking, most people don't really understand like what is film design, what is that. It's not music, because it's not, it's not even really like music in the film. It's it's the soundtrack of death. Everything that you know in your head about the Holocaust. Mm-hmm. That it's 2024 now. We don't need to see it again, right?
Right.
But they allow you to hear it. Oh. And when I'm reading about the movie, they're saying the sound in the movie is a movie within itself. Like the sound movie is its own thing. It's like you're watching something, then you're all listening to something at the same time. And the sound tells, as I said, everything about the Holocaust that our minds are able to fill in the gaps without us having to see it. And so that's what makes the use of sound really, really interesting in this movie. Mm-hmm. It's also a really eerie movie because it's a movie about a family. We're seeing them living their domestic life. We see the kids playing outside amid like the phantom screams of the camp next door. We see the wife like trying on her new fur coat that he just brought her home. But like you, as you're watching, you know where that coat came from. It's like a lot of you're mentally filling in the gaps. We see him in work meetings, like quote unquote boring work meetings, discussing very matter of factly the building of a crematorium. We see him getting a work promotion and having to move to somewhere, you know, another side of Poland, I think they're at, to build more camps. Like you're literally watching just like regular life, domestic life, kind of work life. And what I think makes the movie, which as you, I'm sure you can imagine, is like very contentious. Some people are like, why are they doing this? Other people are like, this is good. You know, for me, what makes the movie successful and what the filmmakers are trying to accomplish is, and what I've seen Jonathan Glazer say in his interviews, is they're attempting to demystify the Nazis and the perpetrators of the atrocities of the Holocaust as like mythologically evil.
We think of them
as these like just these evil monsters in this very mythical sense. Like we can't really understand it. They're just like these demons that we just don't know. But these were actual people.
Regular people, yes.
Regular people.
Who weren't rocking a fucking swastika, who weren't like, you know?
They were, these are people who when they go home, they take off their, you know, uniform. And they have a wife, they have a kids, they sit down for family dinner, and then they go off to work, and their work was the Holocaust. And we somehow, what I think makes the movie successful, at least for me it felt successful, maybe if you're a little bit closer connected to the movie, you might feel a bit different. He somehow gave these, like, full-on monsters a human face without humanizing them. The entire time you're watching, you're disgusted. You never once empathize with the mom when she's like, oh, you got a promotion, we have to move. Like, you never once see them as human. The whole time, they still seem very monstrous. But you are you're watching kind of like the total, you know, that quote, the banality of evil, like the total, like, kind of like blatantness of just the complete eradication of humanity from humans. These are humans that did this to other humans. So it's a tough watch, I would say, but not for the reasons that we're used to it being tough for a Holocaust movie. It's tough because you have to sit in this like eerie discomfort the entire movie, and you're watching, you're reminded of the humanity behind these people. They're not these mythological evil demons. They were, there was a father that did that. He went home to his kids every night. Like, there's a wife who's taking care of his kids. Meanwhile, she's like out gardening and you could hear the people crying over the, it's like you're in a weird space the whole movie, but you're, because we know so much about the Holocaust, because we've studied so much, we've learned so much, we, you know, we talk about it, you're mentally filling in a lot of gaps that you're not necessarily seeing. So that's what makes it a really interesting, for me, one of the more interesting Holocaust movies that I've seen in a while. So yeah, that was Zone of Interest. It's on Max, I think.
Oh, okay, perfect.
Hulu, Amazon Prime, you can watch it a couple places.
Okay.
But yeah, I would be curious to know what people think. If you're like a movie head, or, you know, there's some, there's like a group of people out there that like love World War II movies, love, that's like a whole like subgroup of people. They love like World War II movies, Holocaust movies, like they're deep in that space. What they make of this one. I just saw recently, so I'm still kind of reading, trying to understand both sides and what people are thinking about this film, particularly Jewish scholars. But for me, I found it very fascinating. So that was Zone of Interest.
That sounds like a fascinating genre of film that I'm sure we're entering into. I think Civil War, the movie, the A24 movie, is like trying to get into this kind of a space. I think they're trying to retell war stories in a different way than we're used to seeing. But that is, I think telling stories in that way is actually really, really important.
I think
really
so too.
Important, because I think it's the whole point around exposing that this is exposing that hatred does not belong to people who are simply deemed as demonic, as you said. Hatred and racism and anti-Semitism and all these things, all these phobias can belong to anybody who's in a human body. That's an important story to tell.
Yeah, very interesting. So yeah, check it out. Let me know what you guys think. Or if you watched it, let us know in the comments your thoughts. I'm still kind of, after I watch a movie, particularly like an Oscar movie, I then go into like a deep rabbit hole where I try to read everything and read all the interviews and see all the sides, particularly one that's like contentious. And I haven't done that yet. But I did for my own opinions, which is why I wanted to at least share and let people know it's an interesting watch. So
yeah.
So that was that.
Nice.
Okay, let's end on a more happier note. Michael Arsenault's book.
Not really. Yeah. So Michael Arsenault's book, I finished a lot of it. And I just have to say, for his books, what he does is set out a mission for a lot of his books. I Can't Date Jesus was a mission against being, not only being a Christian and a gay man and loving Beyonce the way that he does, but also the criticism surrounding people aren't going to church anymore and people aren't a part of organized religion anymore. And those types of criticisms that are so, so, they're just, they're everywhere for people who are really out of, from people who are very much so out of touch. And then his next book, I Don't Want to Die Poor, his second book, was a book that was about student loans and about how the people who critique people who have student loans and say that they shouldn't buy Starbucks are completely out of touch. Not buying Starbucks is not going to help you pay down your student loans faster because Starbucks costs $5 a day and student loans have 28% interest. So he wrote an entire book about how he is a creative and he can't manage it. I think this book was a dedication to the people who survived the pandemic. And that it is okay to not be okay after witnessing all that fucking death around you. He tells a story too about Texas because he went back to Texas during that time. And so he tells a political story about how Ted Cruz was acting during that time, how Greg Abbott was acting during that time. They had a lot of weather issues. And people, even the really far removed way that people speak about climate change, as if it has not happened yet. And as if people in Texas were not completely bound to their homes with no electricity or running water off of 1 inch of snow. And that is to the fault of the government. That is to the fault of the local people that those people elected. And that these problems are here already. And if you are somebody who was a victim of those problems, that you should not be taking the criticisms of those who are in power, even at the New York Times and all these other journalism, quote unquote, places who are doing a lot of opinions about how millennials are reacting to the pandemic, about how millennials act in general, how we're not having kids, how we're not buying houses, how we're not doing this, doing that, how it's okay because you survived a pandemic and this is our second recession and we're not even 40. And that kind of validation that he gives through his own storytelling is, it's the most beautiful storytelling too, because he's funny. Yeah. He's a really funny writer.
He is. Yeah.
And it's fun to even, this book is dedicated to his mother, and even seeing how he writes about his mom then, and he wrote about her too in the other two books, but the real dedication that he writes to his mother in this book too, is really, really beautiful. Mm. And so if you feel like, because I was feeling like that a lot during the pandemic, and I said it during the interview, but pretending like the job that I had was important while hearing sirens every 5 minutes was was a like warfare in my own brain. That shit was crazy, crazy, mm-hmm. crazy. Mm-hmm. And then even afterward, we just didn't get any time. We didn't get any time. Yeah. We didn't get any money, despite the what people have said. We got nothing out of it, and we survived death. It literally floating around the air. And that's not for nothing. And you shouldn't take it as not for nothing. And if you're waking up and doing your best, then that's really very much good enough. And if somebody thinks that you ain't shit because you haven't bought a house and contributed to your fucking Roth IRA, you're still doing good. Because we survived something really fucking wild.
We did. Yeah.
So yeah, that's Michael Arsenault's book. And everybody nice. Should go read it.
Yeah, I want to finish it. I know it's like more of a, I guess, dark. I think he said it too. Like, he didn't set out to write such a dark like book, but it's mm-hmm. talking about the pandemic and just all the loss that he experienced. And we all faced a lot of loss in those years. And he's just mm-hmm. writing from that experience. And what he writes about is what he knows. And mm-hmm. Yeah, it's more of a darker edge to Mike Arsenault's writing, but I think an important one, particularly mm-hmm. from someone who is talented at humorous writing, mm-hmm. even when he's being critical, even when he's talking about subjects like depression or the pandemic. It's just interesting to read that tone, I think. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Nice.
Yeah.
Nice.
That was good.
Good. Well, friend, I think we did it.
Yeah. That was Girl, What You Watching.
That was Girl, What You Watching. Mm-hmm. We'll be back next week, y'all. Rate, review, subscribe, join us on Patreon, all that good stuff. And we'll see you then.
See you then. Bye.
Bye.
Mom deserves better than a drugstore card. This Mother's Day, surprise her with a truly special personalized card from Moonpig. Add your favorite photos, a heartfelt message, and we'll even mail it for you the same day, all for just $5. From mom to grandma, we have something to celebrate every mom in your life. Every mom deserves a Moonpig card. Get 50% off your first card at Moonpig.com.
Moonpig.com.
Imagine the softest sheets you've ever felt. Now imagine them getting even softer over time. That's what you'll feel with Boll & Branch's organic cotton sheets. In a recent customer survey, 96% replied that Boll & Branch sheets get softer with every wash. Start getting your best night's sleep in these sheets that get softer and softer for years to come. Try their sheets with a 30-night guarantee. Plus, get 15% off your first order at bollandbranch.com. Code BUTTERY. Exclusions apply. See site for details.
Planning for your next trip?
Elevate your travel style with Quince.
Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And is all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/pack for free shipping and 365-day returns.